Okay, so today I have a very special guest. I am joined by ultra athlete and triathlete and also father and Ballymunner from Dublin. Dear Pendergast, how are you? You join me today. I can't wait to jump into the adventures and the challenges that you've taken on over the last decade. 10 Ironmans in 10 days, 7 marathons across 7 continents, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But before we do jump into that, tell us a bit about your upbringing, because I do ultimately believe that that's what shapes you as a person. And yeah, I just want to hear all about it, and for our listeners as well.
Yeah, thanks, Anya. Well, thanks for having us both. So, yeah, but looking forward to this now since we met there on the weekend. But yeah, I grew up in Ballymun, as you mentioned there. I'm one of 13 kids, so you can imagine at one point we all lived in the house there in Coultry Crescent in Ballymun. So Christmases were a bit of crack, let's just say. But yeah, so 6 brothers, 6 sisters, and sure, you know the story with Ballymun back in the 80s. It didn't have the best of reputations. But my dad was into boxing, and he got us all into it. He actually opened a gym for us. It was the first gym in Ballymun. That was back in I'd say 85 or so, 86 maybe. And my older brothers all got into it. And I know we were talking the weekend about it, but I actually had an accident when I was 7 years old. So I couldn't compete, especially in boxing, like, because I lost the sight of my left eye. So unless you want to give your opponent that kind of an unfair advantage. So I didn't want to do that. But so I was the only one out of the boys then that started playing football, you know. I'd be out on the road. And that was the thing about Ballymun back then. There was lots of green spaces, and we actually had our own green space right beside our house. And I'd be in there from literally morning to night, kicking the ball against the wall or playing with my brothers and friends. So I got into football. I got decent at it as well. And but it wasn't so the eye thing. I know we'll talk about it later, but it was really difficult growing up as a teenager, especially a young lad teenager, with the whole self. Low self-confidence, low self-esteem, all that kind of stuff. And so I never put myself out there to play for any football teams as a young fella. It was only when I was 16, a friend of mine dragged me along, and I only started playing from that age, really. But it was later on, I obviously got into the gym stuff, and when my brothers got a bit older, they turned that gym into like a weightlifting gym. So I kind of got into that, like weightlifting, bodybuilding kind of stuff. And done that for, you know, as a teenager into my 20s and so on. And that was my kind of my career then was more about training people. Like, I was a gym instructor, personal trainer from the age of 18. But the legacy of that gym then, when we got older, obviously my brothers, you know, left that gym and went on to do other things. And one of my other brothers took it on, and then it ended up with me, and it ended up in Trinity Comprehensive School in Ballymun. So it's still there now today. But in terms of where I went from football, like I did never really enjoyed playing football, soccer, like 11 aside. I always struggled with the eye thing, in such a big space, like I can't see on the left side of me, you know. But I found this thing called futsal. It's indoor football, basically. So the dimensions of it's like a basketball court, exactly the same dimensions. And that suited me very much, so especially with the position that I played, which is called the anchor position. It's like a centre half in soccer. It's comparable to that, but the whole pitch would be just there in front of you. So I could literally get from one end to the other in 10, 15 seconds. And you're as much a goal scoring threat as, say, a striker, you know. But I love that. I love the whole skill level of that, all that kind of stuff. And I really thrived in that sport. And I went on to play international. Like, I played for Ireland, and we played European Cups, World Cups, played in Argentina, France, Spain, you name it. Like, it was an amazing time. But that didn't last forever. We are actually, it was so kind of niche as well, I suppose, at the time. That was almost self-funded for the majority. We did get funding from the FAI, but that dried up, and the team basically disbanded, you know. And so I was looking for a new sport, and then I found running. After that, I found triathlon, and just, you know, been going since.
And am I right in saying, I think you were saying to me the other day, because myself and Jay were at an event together and I got to talk to him briefly. Did you say you started running when you were 52? Oh, you
Yeah,
started
not that
competing.
old. Yeah, 32.
42. I don't know where I got 52 from, but that's probably similar to me, Jerry. I didn't start running until I was 42 either. You know, I started running in January. But I suppose I just want to ask you, what advice would you give to someone who probably thinks they're past the mark? There's no point starting running now. I'm so unfit. Like, you know, like limiting beliefs. Like I'm not fit enough. I'll never be good at it. Like that type of inner critic. Like, did you ever experience any like self-doubt or imposter syndrome while you were competing?
Oh, all the time. Well, first of all, though, I can't believe you're fucking 32, by the way. Sorry, of course, but like I thought you were 25 or something. But
Thanks.
yeah, like all the time, to be honest. And I wrote a book there as well about the, I know we'll touch on the DECA, which was 10 Ironmans in 10 days. But after that event, I start just jotting down a few notes about the event. There was no real wish to be an author or anything, but it just kind of grew legs and it turned out to be. But it took me 7 years to write this book, and not because, well, I'm not a great author or anything, but it wasn't because of that. It was because of what you're talking about. It's because of imposter syndrome. It was because of limiting beliefs. So I struggled with it, like, and again, it goes back to the eye thing, I'm sure. I've struggled with it all my life, you know, and it's almost magnified then when you put yourself in the arena of sport, you know. But it's just it's like anything else. It's like, you know, when I was young, as I said, I'd spend all day in the pitch kicking the ball against the wall, and your skill level goes up from just a repetition. It's exactly the same with this kind of stuff. The more you put yourself out there, the more you say, like, you know, that old saying, "Feel the fear and do it anyway." I know I'd probably be talking in cliches for the whole hour here, but like it's very true. Like, you know, it's just realizing that it is like, there's people there, they don't want to see you fail, you know, they want to see you do well. If you take that kind of mindset, say, you know, heck it, like I'll do it anyway and have a go, and it'll never be what you thought it was. Like, it'll always be a completely different reality, you know. So I've learned that through races and all. I remember, you know, lining up at Ironman's thinking, what am I doing here? Like, my first Ironman was Ironman Wales, and I had zero experience. Like, but I just had a go anyway, and it turned out to be, like, obviously that I put a bit of time into the swimming there and all. So that was, I thought I was going to die in the swim or something. I had it in my head, this is going to be ridiculous, and you're going to look foolish and all this kind of stuff. But you just have a go anyway, and the reality is very different, as I said. And then I remember doing that 10 Ironmans in 10 days. That was only 3 years after doing my first Ironman. So my first Ironman was 2014, I think, and then the DECA was 2017. And I remember rocking up to it, and there was a lad who had won the previous one in the race. There was a lad who had won a treble Ironman and all this kind of stuff, all top ultra endurance athletes. And there's me rocking up, and all I had done to that point, well, I'd done a double a couple of months before. But that was it. I had no experience. I had nobody to tell me I was, you know, good at this or bad at this. I was just arriving and then seeing all these people, and it's like, you know, I shouldn't be here kind of thing. But you get over that, and you just have a go at it, you know. And as I said, 99.9% of the time turns out that it's just what you were telling yourself. So if you flip that, you tell yourself, well, listen, you know, that guy there has done it. Or if you've a past experience in something else, you're like, well, I've done that before. Why can't I do this? It's only a little bit further. Like, I'm not going to, you know, flatten myself trying to do it. I'll take me time. If I need a rest, I'll take a rest, all that kind of stuff. If you start talking to yourself rationally and just put yourself in and have a go, it generally turns out to be not what you had envisaged in the first place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that saying, feel the fear and do it anyway, because as someone who used to be riddled with anxiety in school and stuff, and you know, I would get anxiety over irrational things, but at the time they were huge to me. And what I would do is, and I mentioned this in a previous podcast, how I conquered anxiety is I would put myself in situations that terrified me. And you know, with repetition, after doing it so many times, your brain starts to think, okay, this actually isn't that scary now. I've proved to myself I can handle these situations, and it just gets a bit easier then going forward. And even with the running, I actually just, my last podcast was called Trust in the Process. Like, no one was an expert in the, in their first day of their new job or their first week, and it just takes repetition, consistency, trust in the process, showing up, But if you're stop starting, the same with fat loss, the same with running, the same with anything in life, like you're never going to be able to get good at it if you keep stop starting. So it might feel
Yeah.
shit. You might feel that you're shit at the start, but you won't be in 9 months' time or even 12 months' time, you know?
Hold on. Yeah, you touched on it there. Consistency, that word consistency. It all comes back to that for me. And obviously you just have to show up as well. But like on that as well, I've just come from a talk. I've done a talk in front of like about 200. Now you're primary school kids, so it was a bit more relaxed, if you get me. But that doing that a couple of years ago, there's no way. Like I grew up, I was pretty much mute. I can remember getting my friends to go into the shop van just to get us jellies and stuff like that because I was too afraid to ask for them. Like I was just so I suppose insecure, but introverted is the word I'm looking for. But now I've put myself in that position so many times now that I look forward to it. I love it now. I love getting the opportunity to speak to a room full of people, but again, as you say, you just have to put yourself in there in the first place, and as I said, it's never as bad as you build it up to be in your head.
Yeah, and you know what it is? I feel like sometimes people get in their head if they failed once that they'll always fail. And when you look at like super sports stars, athletes, etc., like everyone has experienced failure. But I always say it's how you respond to the failure as well. Like, yeah, you can stay down if you want, but it's similar to fat loss as well. When I coach people through, calorie deficit or whatever, and they have a bad weekend and they just think, oh, I'm not good at this, so I'll just start again next year. I'll just wait till after Christmas.
Back
And it's
on
like
Monday, yeah.
every step counts, every minute of cardio, showing up, like you said, even kicking a ball against the wall, like it all adds up with repetition. And I don't think people realize the power of using like that dialogue, that inner dialogue, because I think
Yeah.
sometimes they're waiting on someone else to say it to them when you
Yeah,
need to be
yeah.
saying it to yourself.
Yeah, what you say to yourself really matters. I don't think you said it there. People don't realize how powerful that is. Like if you another cliche for you, whatever you tell yourself, if you tell yourself, you can or you can't, it's going to be true, and as well, you mentioned there that failure, like the fear of failure. Okay, it's hard to switch that initially, but failing is probably the best thing that'll ever happen to you. Like failure is feedback. There's another one for you, and I can remember, God, the amount of races that I DNF'd in before I'd done that DECA was like, I mean, there was a good few, let's just say, and I learned more from them that I took into that DECA than I could learn from the ones that I did finish, so it's realizing that and not letting it kind of, put you off and put you out. So instead of saying, let's say you DNF in a triathlon or whatever, and say, right, that's not for me. That's another thing you hear with people in the running club, like a coach up in the running club, or this might just be for me. You haven't given it a fucking chance, and using that kind of failure as feedback, it's very powerful, but yeah, it's what were we saying there? I've lost track.
Just about like that inner dialogue. Because, and you know what, just
Yeah.
to touch on that same subject as well, I do think your environment, like for instance, like I have two pages. I have my comedy page and I have my coaching page. And I remember, I started putting up skits going back in 2014, and I said to someone, I was like, you know what, I might make a separate Facebook page and make it a comedy page rather than just uploading to my personal page. And someone said, ah, don't be getting ahead of yourself now, come on. And I think, surround yourself with people like that. That just adds fuel to fire with the whole, limiting beliefs and stuff. And I do think it's important to surround yourself with grown up. And I know it's easy for us to tell ourselves, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. But it's even worse then when you have someone in your ear being like, yeah, no, I think you're getting ahead of yourself there. Like, did you have anyone like that around you? Like, or it could have been a teacher, it could have been, an old friend or something.
But you get people who say things like that for you, but the heart is in the right place as well. Do you know what I mean? And it's just maybe they don't have the experience or don't realize what you're probably striving for. For example, right? I remember telling my wife, and my wife is my biggest supporter ever. And I mean, I wouldn't have done any of the stuff I've done without her. So I remember, I I think we talked about this the weekend. I'm the kind of person who just wants to do bigger and bigger and bigger. Once I do something, I won't do it again. I want to do the next biggest thing. Like, the problem with that is you run out of things, but that's another conversation. But I remember telling them I had done one. I had done my first Ironman. That was 2014, and I wanted to do more of them. But I think I'd done another one or two, and then I came across this thing called like a double Ironman. So you do a bit of research on it, and then found this thing called a treble, and then a quin, which is five, and then the granddaddy of them all was the deca. And this event over in the UK was doing all of them, but I couldn't in my head, I couldn't justify signing up for one of them and going over and just doing two, three, or five. I had to have a go at the 10, and if you fail, so what? Like, at least you had a go, and you might, aim for the stars, or that old cliche as well. You might. At least if I fail 10, I might get five out, but that kind of thing. But I remember saying this to my wife and my training partner at the time, Trev, and they were real concerned, and their concern was genuine. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't like trying to knock you down or anything. But you are right when you think of it as well, in that I showed no signs of being capable of doing 10 Ironmans in 10 days, because all I had done really was one. But I knew, that way, I knew I could do it. I felt that self-belief because of what I had done previously. My self-belief and confidence was grown, so it's I didn't take it really to heart. I was trying to get them on side a bit and explain to them. So I made kind of deals with my wife, especially. It was this event I had done. No, I hadn't done it at this stage, but there was an event down in Westmeath called Celtic Warrior, and it was the first and only time a double Ironman was ever to be done. It was just by chance. It was 2 months beforehand, so I signed up for it, done it. She came down with me, crewed me for it and all. So she's seen firsthand, what I had, like what I could potentially achieve, and that's how I got on side. But like outside of that, obviously they want what's best for you, and I've just kind of giving you their feedback, but it's not taking it in, like, maybe they're right. It's believing in yourself as well. That was huge, because I could have just said, man, maybe they're right, and they have a point. I haven't done that in the past to show that I can do 10 Ironmans. And if I had to listen to it, like, even though the heart was in the right place, I wouldn't have. Like, I went over to that thing, to that event, and as I said, I was surrounded by, experienced endurance athletes, and I ended up winning that event. But that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't believed in myself, that way.
Yeah, sometimes you're your own biggest cheerleader. I actually, I watched a documentary last night. I don't know whether you've ever seen it. It's on YouTube. You can watch it for free, and I think it's on Apple TV as well. But it's called Iceman. So I don't know. It's basically a fella who went to the Antarctica to complete an Ironman. The first fella to do it. Now I watched it and it was grueling. He done it in like 3 days because there was a snowstorm. They went up with a whole crew. Like they videoed the thing. They were camping there and stuff. And he mentioned at the start of it, he was like, a lot of people said, are you mad going to do something like that? Like, you're going to end up killing yourself, like, blah, blah, blah. And he said, the people who will tell you we can't do something are either people who have never like broke their limits or they've never experienced it themselves, Whereas, like, you might have spoke to someone in the same, I suppose, that maybe would have similar goals to you or has done an Ironman before and being like, oh yeah, like I think you could probably do it. It's weird that like the people who tell us we can't do things have just probably never either, achieved something huge themselves because maybe their own limiting beliefs. And like you said, their heart is in a good place, but it's like I'd love you to, smash your own limiting beliefs and do something that you thought you could never do before because then you'll know where I'm coming from. Like, for example, my partner, he said to me when I said, oh, I've signed up for the Dublin Marathon, this was last October, he was like, really? He's like, ah, marathons aren't for you. And the only reason he said that to me is because when he was into running, I'd be like, you're mad. Running does not interest me in the slightest. Like, it's so boring. It's this, is that. So he was just saying that to me based on my feedback, But I was putting myself, and I love taking on challenges like yourself, Jerry. I did a fitness photo shoot. I'm doing the marathon now. I've done a few halves. And Enya 5 years ago would probably be looking at me in disbelief thinking, Jesus, like I can't believe like you're this person now. And you do find different versions of yourself, over the decades and stuff. And I don't know where you see that. The Irish Times did a piece in the paper there recently about, women in their 50s and 60s that started going to the gym and they're weightlifting and they're powerlifting and stuff. And there
Wow.
is no limit. Like there's just, you can start at any age. And I do think that some people feel age hinders them, their lifestyle, or they don't have time. I remember speaking to you the weekend at that event, and you said you were getting up at one stage at like 3 a.m. to get training in, weren't you?
Yeah, the kids were like primary school age at that time, and that was 2017. So I mean, we talked about priorities at the weekend, and they were obviously the priority. Their mom is a scientist, like she works in a lab, so she is at the time. So my hours basically were during the evening, so I had to kind of school run and look after the kids after school, that kind of thing. So that was my priority, looking after the boys, so outside of that, I had to obviously work in the evening then as well. So my training had to get done in the morning, and you're talking like 4, 5, 6 hour bikes. Sometimes you're up at 3, and it's just to get it done. Like, you just, if you're passionate about it and you want to do something, you'll make it work. And that's just what was required at the time. I
How
knew
do
it was
you
something I
feel?
really wanted to do.
How do you feel though? And because people would say this to me a lot, and how do you stay motivated? But like you just said, I think if someone really wants it, they don't wait for motivation, they just do it, they just take action. And like you said, I'm sure you didn't jump out of the bed at 3 a.m. I can't wait to do this bike session, but you knew the only way I'm going to reach this goal is by doing something I don't want to do, but it has to be done. Discipline.
Yeah, I remember being out on the bike, and it was like 4 a.m. It was like a Saturday night, basically, into Sunday morning, like in the UFC. I'm a fan of the UFC. I love watching all the fights, and they're on the telly, like, and it would have been just so easy to stay at home watching that, And I can remember going out on the bike. I think I forgot my gloves this day, and it would have been coming into October, something like that, anyway. But my hands were literally. Couldn't feel them or anything, and it's in the moments you're like, what am I doing here? Like 4 a.m., you can't even feel your hands. Like, and then it's like, well, why are you doing it? So like at that stage, I was after doing a couple of big endurance events, and for me, they just I know they really helped my self confidence, because I grew up on the other end of the scale. And I could see firsthand what doing these events was doing for me internally and externally. Obviously, you're getting fit and healthy and everything else, and that was another plus from my work. But it was how it made me feel about myself as well that was what was driving it as well, that way. So it's having that reason, that purpose. It makes like getting up at 4 a.m. not easy, don't get me wrong, it's never easy. Even 4 p.m. in the sun can be hard. You know what I mean? It's just, it drives you to keep going. You know what I mean? So, and I think that's something you have to have. You can't just say, well, I want to do a marathon because I've seen your woman Enya is doing one, so I'm going to jump in and do it. Like, it just doesn't work,
I think your why has to be strong enough, because I've had that said to me before, and I say it to clients as well, when they kind of give up at the first hurdle, or, hey, Enya, it's not for me. I might be back to you after Christmas, or, oh, I'm struggling with motivation like these last 2 weeks. And you just have to remember your why. And if your why is not strong enough, and sometimes your why is like you said, to impress someone else, or, just for a picture to post on Instagram, like, no, like, your why should be, it should drive you. It should be what gets you out of bed at 4 a.m. And I remember reading a quote before, like, if you feel like you're not working on anything at the moment, or you have no purpose, or you feel like you're not good at anything, work on yourself. Like, you are your own best project. And I mentioned it in my podcast I did last week, Trust in the Process. It's like the dopamine and the euphoric feeling you get. Okay, it might take, like you said, training for an Ironman, it might take 6 months to a year. Like, that long-term gratification, that feeling, that euphoric feeling, like, I'm responsible for getting me here to this start line. Like, I've done all the work, rather than like instant gratification, like opting to stay in bed, opting to just, take the easy route, because our brain is programmed and wired for comfort,
Absolutely. It goes back to that whole thing, isn't it? Doing hard things, like, and it's the instant gratification, it just doesn't work. Like, it lasts so long, like, but yeah, you have to have something strong to keep you in it. And I think that's the thing as well, the whole you're kind of touching on it there, the instant gratification, like people coming up to you, obviously you walk in the same line of walk, I'm sure you get it all the time. People coming up like 2 weeks to go before the holiday and they're like, oh, I want to do a stone, you know what I mean? And you're like, okay, what's it for? Holiday, when is it? Next week. Like, do you know what I mean? It's stuff like this, like improving yourself, it's a they're long-term goals. Like, I mean, you need to be thinking. You know, for me, my thing is I want to be the world champion of Ironman when I'm 90. Like, you know what I mean? You have to have those long-term goals to, I mean, strive for. Like, these quick things, they just don't last. And you see it as well. I'm sure you see it as well. People do get into great shape. They do all that. Then they go and, they reach their goal or whatever else, and then they just leave it. And that's it then. You see that all the time as well, like, you know what I mean? And you'll see it here now at the end of the marathon in October. I see it all the time in running. They get their marathon done, but they don't capitalize on the strength and the mental strength, the physical strength, all those months of training. They reach their goal and then they leave it, but they'll want to do the marathon again next year. They rock up at, like, during the summer or the month before. Like, it's just about, I suppose, yeah, just being, what's the word I'm looking for? Like longevity kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's staying in and keeping at it, like, and not just short kind of projects.
But speaking of marathons, you done 7 marathons over 7 continents in Niger. I did 12 pubs at Christmas and I didn't even make it to pub number 7, and you're doing 7 marathons in 7 continents.
12 pubs. You know what? The 7 marathons would be easier for me than the fucking 12 pubs. Oh man, I don't know how you do it, but yeah, it was brilliant. Once in a lifetime thing, absolutely. And it just kind of came at me. It just fell in my lap one day. I had signed up for another event, right? That was only last year. Was the 777? Excuse me. Was in November, but I had signed up to Marathon des Sables, which is like 250K across the Sahara. I literally think on the Thursday, right? And then I got a phone call on the Saturday about the 777. And the Sahara one was just there in May, I think, right? So I had that signed up, and that was my big one for this year, 2025. But I got a call from a friend of a friend. I'd inquired about this race the year previous, but there's a big price tag on it, like 50 grand, like, to do this event,
Jesus.
you know, that way. And that's definitely not something I have floating around. But they rang me anyway on the Saturday and was talking away, and he was like, maybe you can raise a few bob here and there and have a go to get into it. And I was like, it was like it was too good to turn down, like, you know, that way. And I got a few grand off it as well, like. So I jumped on it anyway. Had to convince the boss as well. So I was just basically fundraising for the rest of the year, kind of, and then into the start of this, or sorry, into the right up until the race even, sorry. And managed to get there anyway, managed to get there. But it was like unbelievable. The first one was in Antarctica, right? And
Jesus.
yeah, it's just, I'll tell you about that now in a sec. But they have to start it in Antarctica because the weather is so unpredictable. So we can get down to like -50, and but that's not even the worst thing about it is the wind. If you get low temps and then the wind, it can literally, I mean, it's very very dangerous, like, you know, to be out in. But so it's a case of they start there. So we were due to start on the 15th, say 15th of November. But like there could be bad weather on the 15th, so you could be starting on the 16th, 17th, whatever. They'll wait until there's a weather window. So we rocked up to the it was in South Africa where everybody met, like, because it's the closest point to Antarctica where we land. It's a 5-hour flight. So the race brief was in Cape Town, South Africa. So we met there, and the race brief was on the 13th, say, so 2 days before the race. And they were like, okay, lads, so here's the situation. It's really bad in Antarctica today, and it's really bad there on Friday when you're supposed to be going. But there's a weather window tomorrow, so go home and get your gear. We're going to start tomorrow. And that was on the Thursday. So everyone was like, what's this like? You know what I mean? But I was just dying to get started. Like, so I was delighted with that. Back to the hotel, I got our gear, and we are going to Antarctica that night, basically 4 a.m. I think something like that was the flight. Flew into Antarctica. It's like a specialized plane, you know, because it needs to, on a whim, be able to turn around and come back. Thankfully, it wasn't needed. But we got there, 5 hour flight off the plane, over to the start line, pretty much in your gear. You actually get your gear on the plane, and then pretty much start. And it was a 10.5K loop. There's no airports around in Antarctica. It's just like a landing strip, and it's basically a scraped out kind of piece of ice, you know, that way. And we were basically running that loop around the plane. So all the time you could see the plane in the middle of the loop, say. So 4 laps of that. But it was minus 16 when we got there, like, you know. So, and that was, I mean, that was, we are very lucky, let's just say. There was zero wind. It was just an incredible day. The sun, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. The sun was blinding. I actually got sunburned in Antarctica. But at the same time, so you start with like a jacket, a fleece under that, like a kind of sporty type fleece. It's not like your, you know, your woolly type fleece. It's a bit more breathable. And then merino wool base layer under that. So merino wool base layer, leg and leggings on top, jumper and jacket, right? But when you start, I'd say 500, 600 meters into our set, peeling off layers, the gloves came off, the jacket came off, and settled into it, and it was grand. By the time I finished, my face was sunburned, but was frozen as well, where I couldn't mouth any words. Like, you know, I could speak, but my lips are frozen. So I was like trying to
No
speak to
blood
the camera.
circulation. What it, that's what would
Just
happen.
frozen. Just,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know, just frozen. But it was funny, like, you know. But that was class. And I swear to God, it's just like another planet. It was just, it's very hard to describe, like, unless you're there. It's, they don't even let you in. You can't just travel there, obviously. You have to get a special permit. You have to make sure what you're wearing has no dirt on it. All crazy stuff, like, you know, just to be allowed in, like. But yeah, once in a lifetime stuff, definitely. Amazing. I mean, it's very hard to put into words how beautiful it is. You know, it's
I'd
just
say it's
gorgeous.
like being on another planet. Like there's just no trace
Yeah.
of civilization.
Yeah, nobody lives there. Like, it's you know, just it's a floating lump of ice, basically. It's 100% water based, like, you know what I mean? They put the mountains there as well, which is funny enough. And it's quite mountainous, like, but yeah, very beautiful. But from there, then, I mean, literally wait for the last person. I don't even think the last person got to finish. Like, so there's some people there who are just walk running it, like, you know, that way. And one of them didn't get to, like, we are kind of behind schedule. So they kind of, as she was coming past the plane, they threw her into a sled. It's like a motorized sled, and drove her to the plane, got her on, and she actually finished the marathon up and down the aisles of the plane. Like, she had like a 400 meter today or something. But that was how crazy it was, you know. So from there back to South Africa, landed in South Africa at like, it was 4 in the morning. We still had a hotel room from the, you know, the night before, kind of thing. And I think I got an hour sleep or something, 2 hours sleep, and then you're back up to start the next marathon at 7 or something like that. And then you're going from obviously the extreme cold to the extreme heat of South Africa. But very beautiful. Cape Town is very beautiful. You're running up and down the promenade there, and on one side you have Table Mountain. I think it's called the Lion's Tooth as well. But really spectacular views. And then on the left you have the sea, like, you know, it's very, very strange kind of landscape, but beautiful. So we've done the marathon there. That was actually, I think that was probably, I think Antarctica is everyone's highlight because of how amazing a place it is. But for me, South Africa was very special as well, because I got to run with a group. There were 7 of us, and we were just all around the same time. And instead of, you know, nipping ahead of each other and all that kind of stuff, we decided to run together. And I was absolutely ecstatic about that, because I got to run with a couple of people who were just, I mean, incredible athletes. There was one girl called Shireen. She's a four-time Olympian. She'd done the Winter Olympics 3 times as a skier. She'd done the Summer Olympics once. I think it might have been, I can't remember what year it was, but anyway, she'd done the marathon and the Olympics as well. There was a two-time Olympian, Jenny Simpson. She's like a bronze medalist on the track. There was the guy who won it the year previous. He actually won it that year as well. There was a Nike athlete who was the overall female winner. There was a Peloton athlete as well. She was second. She was incredible. And there was another girl who Ashley Simpson. Can't remember her second name. Ashley Paulson, sorry. But she won a famous, you ever hear of Badwater? Like a
No.
famous race in the UK. Yeah, Goggins would be, David Goggins, he'd be famous for doing that, say, like. But she won that twice. She won it the first year as the top female, and she won it the second year as the top overall person. She beat all the lads as well. So she's a very strong runner. So there was seven of us crossing the line on that in that race. So for me, that was a real highlight, like, and then it was from there to Perth, Australia. We done one there. That was a bit cooler temps. We got to run in the evening, lovely sunset by the Swan River into the nighttime. Then from there, long flight to Istanbul. Istanbul, we actually done two in Istanbul, one on the European side, because Istanbul is the only city in the world that crosses two continents. So a little bit of a cheat there. But I tell you, it was meant to be a cheat where we'd get a hotel that night. That was all booked. But when we landed for the first of them, it was meant to start at 8 p.m. But there was an issue with the course that there was all fishermen along the course, and they were obviously, casting lines and stuff, so we couldn't run behind them. So we had to wait until they all cleared out and asked them to all clear out. But of course, they were like, no chance, like, get out of here. So unfortunately, we had to wait until midnight before we started that marathon. And the course, because it was so dark and it was actually wet and windy, and it was a little bit dodgy then at that stage, that they shortened the course to 1 kilometer out and 1 kilometer back. But I love that because I train on a 500 meter course, asphalt course in Ballymun. So that suited me down to the ground. So I loved that one, and it was cool. In terms of the conditions, like, cool enough that you could still run in a t-shirt, but it was raining, which kept you cool as well.
How is
So I
that
loved
from
that one.
a mental standpoint? Like that Iceman documentary that I watched when he was doing an Ironman, obviously, or cycling, swimming, and running. When he was doing the cycling part, because of the snow in the Antarctica, they had to scrape out a 200 meter track for him, and he just had to do a loop constantly. And that's, I think, it's 180 kilometers you have to cycle in an Ironman,
That's
isn't
right.
it? Like how, and he was saying it, like the mental resilience and the perseverance you need to just keep doing the same loop over and over again. Like, and you would have done, how big was the loop in Antarctica that you were running?
10.4 or 10.5K of the big old loop. That's fine. Like, you know what I mean? Four loops of that. And that's the thing as well. Like, that's the beauty of loops. I know people say it all the time. And it goes back to what you tell yourself is true as well. So if you were there pissing and moaning about, oh, it's 500 meter loop all the time, blah, 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 seeing the same thing all the time. I mean, you're there to get a certain distance. You're not there to go and view the beauty of a place kind of thing. You know what I mean? You're there to get a job done. So, but for me, it was an advantage, definitely, that I'd done like a lot of training on that course. So at that stage, to me, it was nothing. I wasn't just rocking up and like the others were, like, you know, that way, or like, your man probably hadn't foreseen that the weather would be so bad in Antarctica that you'd have to do around 200 meter loop. That is a bit more challenging. But for me, it was what I was used to, and I love running on loops all the time, like, you know. So it was nothing to me. It was actually, oh yeah, this is my marathon, you know, that way. But again, like in any scenario, you can flip the switch on it. Like, let's say if it is the first time for you, like, if you're going to be moaning about it, like, that's going to have an effect on your performance, you know. So it's just get on with it and actually lie to yourself and trick yourself and saying, like, this is what I need. This is perfect for me, all that kind of stuff. So that was grand. But it meant we finished then. I was running all my marathons at that point, like 3:14, 3:15.
Jesus.
Like, so I finished that one in 3:14 as well. And I was one of the lucky ones, because some people was taking them 8 hours, like, you know what I mean? So I was on the bus back to the hotel, something to eat, and got a couple of hours. But we are back up then, I think at 7, something like that, 7 or 8 to go to the next one. But there's people who are literally finishing that marathon, getting on the bus, getting back to the hotel, not even getting up to their room, and just back on another bus to go to the next marathon, which was, I think, half an hour,
It was
45
a tight
minutes away.
schedule, obviously, was it?
Very tight, yeah. So the whole premise of it is to do with 7:77. Because if you don't stick to the plan and you have to wait for people, it's only 7:77, 7 marathons on 7 continents. versus in the time frame of 7 days. So it was very important to stick to the schedule. And the guy who was running it, his name is, he's a doctor, his name is David Kelly. He was on the ball. The team were brilliant. It was a group of Irish lads, actually. And they were just like not having any of it. Like a woman who got put onto the plane at the end of it. Obviously, she wasn't happy about it. Some of the Americans who were friends of hers weren't happy about it. But in the moment, that's fair enough. But you have to see the overall goal is to get that 7.77. You know the way. Now she still managed to get her marathon done. I thought that was brilliant, by the way, doing it up and down the plane. I thought that was brilliant because everyone got involved. I remember getting video of it, and all we got cheering her on. It was great atmosphere, you know. But at the end of the day, there's still the job of getting the 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents. So that's it, and we can't, or anybody can't let that go. You know that way. But anyway, back to that. Istanbul one, it was a quick jaunt across the Bosphorus Bridge into the Asian side then. And it was at that stage then I started to pick up a little bit of a niggle in my Achilles. So that day we were again along the sea, kind of on a promenade up and down. I think it might have been six or seven loops or up and out and backs, kind of. And I started to slow down a bit, you know, that way. My Achilles was starting to be a bit of an issue. I think I finished that one 3:20. So it wasn't too bad. It wasn't dropping out. And at that stage, I was competitive, to be fair, at that stage. But there was, I'll tell you quickly, there was a guy who was a good friend of mine now, Willie. This is a proper marathon runner, by the way. He broke the world record in Antarctica when we were there. The old record was 3 something. Oh, sorry, 2:55. He done like 2:34 or something.
Oh my God, on
Unbelievable.
snow.
Very talented. I think he has a 2:14 in Dublin. And Dublin's a tough course, by the way. But anyway, he was banging them all out 2:30. Yeah, 2:30 every day. And then, but I'll get to him anyway. He was still in the race, so I was competitive, but I wasn't that competitive. Do you know what I mean? It was he was breaking the overall world record. He broke the record in Antarctica. I think he was breaking them all as we went along. But anyway, this was the 5th day, and I was starting to slow down. I could start to feel my Achilles, right? And so the thing for me was, I'm vegan, right? And you're getting looked after by the lads. There's no time to go and get food anywhere at any stage. You can pick something up through the airport, but again, it's airport food, and then you're eating airplane food. So for me, they just kept putting watermelon in front of me, and I was like, "Hey, lads, give us something with a bit of oomph in it, like, you know." So I was kind of living on watermelon and tofu, which is fine, but I'm used to eating, like, you know, chickpeas, butter beans, lentils, real nutrient dense foods. And unfortunately, there was none of that. Then, on top of that, you're sleeping in quotes on a plane. You're not sleeping at any stage. There's zero deep sleep because even though you can recline your chair, that's all beautiful, that's all great, and you drift off for a bit. But I mean, you have the noise of the plane, you have the noise of chatter. The plane moves a little bit anyway, and you're awake again, you know the way? So you never get proper sleep. So you're like a zombie for the week, to be honest.
Jesus.
But that was difficult. But the thing about that is your body's not recovering, you know what I mean? And I think that's where it's so easy to pick up these little injuries or niggles that turn into injuries. There was a lad I was running with on the on this one in the Asian side of a thing. He was the overall winner, but he got a bad injury as well on this particular day. Now, fair play to him, he came back on the next two, but his time on that day was something like 5 hours something as well. But he had such good kind of times over the other days that he still ended up winning the race, right? But anyway, we flew then from Istanbul. I managed to get through that one. That was fine, but I didn't know the extent of the injury. And I think, personally, I think that my body didn't recover on the flight from Istanbul to Colombia was 18 hours, and I got no recovery. I think that niggle just turned into an injury overnight, honestly, to the point where I remember getting to Colombia, feeling my Achilles with a little bit of a limp. So, but it could have been the case that you just warm it up and you're grand then, you know that way. But anyway, I tested it out. I didn't do any kind of dynamic warm up because I didn't want to really put it under that much pressure. So I said I'll start slow into this 6th one, and see how it goes. But the thing with Cartagena in Colombia was it was Outrageous heat. Outrageous heat. It was like 36 degrees, which isn't bad, right? I've been in worse, but it's the humidity was 90 something. I think it was 94 or 95%, something like that. I mean, we landed there, we got to a hotel, we weren't staying there or anything, but they got a hotel for us where we could just wait a couple of hours before we start. But I think they probably knew the heat was going to be extreme, that we couldn't be waiting out in it. But when you leave the hotel, then it's just like getting a punch in the chest. The humidity and the heat, it catches your breath. Like, it's like, oh my God, I'm in trouble here. Like, if I have to run in this. But I started the race anyway, and the first K was just outside of the heat, the Achilles just went completely where I knew I couldn't run on it, that way. So I had to walk basically the first half of that. And I'm not big on painkillers or anything like that, but it got to a case where I just had to take them. So I think I took ibuprofen, and then they kicked in probably an hour later, and where I could kind of run, slightly run, walk, run, walk. And it did get better, to be honest, to the point where I could run a bit better at the end of it. But I went from doing 3:14 marathons to doing like 5:20. Cartagena was 5:20, I think it was. And it was, yeah, I mean, the whole thing changed from being competitive, like, to just something else. And it was just about finishing it then, that way,
I
because I didn't
suppose,
know that.
yeah, like any human being, even the fittest of them all would start to feel the tax on the body towards the end of that week,
Unbelievable. And going back to Willie Mansell is his name. That day, he's in a league of his own, untouchable. Like, you know what I mean? He's finishing 20 minutes, half an hour before the second place person, that kind of thing. But he actually pulled out of the race completely that day. I mean, I know we're Irish and we're pale, but Willie's another level of pale, like, and he's kind of bald. He shaves his head, so he was doing this marathon, no cap, all this stuff, and it just caught up on him. I'd say, again, going back to that lack of sleep, that way your body just reacts completely different. And I remember the lads were saying, Willie's out of the race, to me, and I was like, oh, he should have just waited for me. I would have, like, I took it personally almost. I don't know, Willie. It's just, I didn't know Willie had to stay at that stage, sorry, but you take it almost personally because you're in a little bubble. Everybody's almost family at this stage. And it's like, I could have talked them round or whatever. And I remember having this conversation with Willie later. He says, Jer, not a chance. I would just, there was no talking to me. I wasn't myself. I just didn't want any of it, and that's fair enough then, but I'd say if he walked the next two marathons, he still would have broke the world record. He was that far ahead. He's so strong as a runner. But anyway, we got that done, and that's what it turned into. It turned into like just getting through it, getting it done, getting the job done. So back to the back on the bus kind of thing, back to the airport. And that was the thing about it. The hardest part wasn't the marathons. The marathons were actually easy. Not easy. They were the easy part of the thing. And I probably underestimated it because I had done the DECA, which was like, they were like 14 to 17-hour days, like, depending how bad or good the day went. But they're like nonstop. That's actual physical exertion, physical activity, whether it be swim, bike, or run. Whereas these is like 3 hours, 4 hours max. Like, you know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, that'll be all right. And then I can relax and do nothing for the rest of the day. But you're going through airport security, you're getting on and off buses, you're getting on and off
Yeah.
planes. That's worse. I'd rather be running the marathon, or I'd rather be still running instead of doing all that queuing crap. You know what I mean? But anyway, that took a lot out of me and everyone else as well. But the last one then was just a 3 hour flight from Colombia up to Miami. Again, it wasn't as extreme, not even close in terms of the heat and extreme conditions of Cartagena, but it was still hot, but it was a breeze. We were on the coast. It was beautiful. Miami was gorgeous. And again, for me, it was just finishing the marathon. But I took the painkillers before, and it allowed me then to just jog. I literally didn't want to stop this whole thing, and I just jogged the whole thing. Nice and easy. It was a bit of an issue at the end, but I didn't have to stop really at all. And I just done a 4 hour kind of marathon on that one. And just managed to finish it. nice and handy with no kind of complications. And for that one, even though my chances of winning the whole thing was long gone, I just couldn't stop doing that whole margin with the biggest smile on my face because I knew I was going to do it then. And that kind of pressure of not knowing was gone. It was a beautiful day. Everybody, all the Americans had all their families there and all because it was probably a short trip for some of them. And the atmosphere was just incredible. I think we've done another six or seven loops. And every time you come back, I mean, there's just hundreds of people there cheering you on. Like it was just incredible, you know? But as I said, once in a lifetime, amazing event. And very, very, very grateful that I got to do that, like, you know?
Oh yeah, that is once in a lifetime stuff. Like, imagine telling the grandkids about
Yeah. I mean, I've amazing pictures from it, amazing stories from it. Do you know what the best thing is as well from it though? I think every one person on that plane I got to have a little conversation with at some stage and got to bond with. And I could, I mean, literally call them now kind of thing. But Willie, like me and Willie are doing a lot of stuff together. We talk all the time. We talk nearly every day. He's gone for a 2:10 in Berlin this weekend. 2:10, like that stuff is just,
Jesus.
it's another level. And but he didn't know I'd done all that DECA stuff until recently because you don't go around and say, oh, I've done this and I've done that. Somebody else told him about it and he sent me a message. What's this stuff about 10 Ironmans, 10 days? And I'm like, will you go away, you and your 2:10 marathon? Like that's just different stuff to me, you know that way. But like I got to have meet great people. He started going out with one of the other contestants or lessons participants, Annie, who's a German. She's a fantastic runner as well. She was doing all the whole marathon 3:30, and she would have probably won the event if it wasn't for the Olympians in the race, that kind of thing. But it's just we Annie was over for a couple of events with us as well. We got to do runs, but it's the friendships is sorry is the point. The friendship you forge. Another man, Ferg. He's another Irishman living in Switzerland. We talk all the time as well, and we're planning to do other events together next year. That kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? That's the real gold. That's the real beauty of these kind of events. It's not just rock up, do your 5K, 10K, or your marathon, wherever it is, and you go home. You get the bond with them throughout these things, and it's just like a little kind of family traveling around for a week. You know that way?
It's people
It's
who
just
share the
incredible.
same, I suppose, goals as you, values as you, and it's very similar to enjoy the process of becoming like, yeah, like, finishing the marathon, like that's the victory lap. And obviously it's the work that you put in from, the start of the training and until the marathon. That's the part that builds the character. And then obviously the people that you meet along the way. And I used to be
Yeah.
big into, I never competed on stage or did bodybuilding. I just enjoyed it. I did a fitness photo shoot and stuff, but I feel like the running community is just so much bigger, the
It's exploded since COVID, hasn't it? I mean, you look at all the our club is like an Athletics Ireland registered club, like, and I go to like the board meetings for all them, and you see all the numbers of all the people basically going into existing clubs first and foremost are all trending upwards, and then the amount of new clubs every year is getting bigger and bigger as well. Like you know, it's just exploded. And even out when we run our long runs from Ballymun out to the Phoenix Park, and we do whatever in the Phoenix Park and back, but it's just the amount of people out in the Phoenix Park every Sunday morning doing the long runs, and it's not even that. It's then how friendly they are because they know what you're going through and they're going through the same thing and everyone's saying hello to each other. It's real like it's like a we turn into Americans all of a sudden or like hey guys all this kind of stuff but it's just brilliant like and I love seeing it. I think it's great because I know there's an impact then on like society as well like you know what I mean everybody's just so nice to each other as well. It's brilliant. It's just class. I love it. And
Yeah,
are you training by the way are you training on your own or are you training with a club?
on my own, like, and you know what, like, I think just the way my training is aligning, the days that it falls on my long runs and stuff, like sometimes it doesn't like kind of sync up with like run clubs and stuff. But training on my own versus like running an actual like half marathon race and stuff, like you do feel that buzz that, even if you did have a partner to run with, like do a long run with, it does make all the difference because it's harder to cheer yourself on when it's just you. Like I've done like, 18, 20 kilometer runs by myself. I've never run anything longer than 21 kilometers at the moment, and it's tough. Like, I just put on a good playlist, and sometimes you just kind of get lost in it, and you're just kind of cruising. But to run competitively and like try to hit a PB, like, you need that buzz around you. You need the support, and it's something that I do want to do. Because don't get me wrong, like, we all have friends, and some of our friends, they're not into running, they're not into exercise, and that's great. But it's great that there is a group of people there, or a community that do share the same passion for exercise or running that you do, you know?
Yeah, shared suffering. And yeah, no, it's very helpful, but as well doing the stuff on your own, because nobody can drag you along either. So that is important as well, to be able to do those long runs yourself as well. But definitely, I mean, having that community and that support makes it so much easier. So we obviously have a group in the club at the moment, training for the Dublin City half and full. So a lot of them are going into the half and the full next year. But you can feel the, what's the word, the energy almost lifting week on week as we get closer to it. Like, and there's more of a team kind of feel to it every time we go out to a session, and everyone's spurring each other on.
I've seen it myself in the half marathons. Like, I did the Dublin City half, and then the Clontarf half marathon. And do you know what? Like, I was nearly jealous when I seen, the run clubs in all their t-shirts, and they're all running together, and like one of them has a speaker and stuff like that. And like, that would just make all the difference, and that they're blown by it, because they're obviously a bit quicker than me. But that would make all the difference, and it actually make it fun rather than like this grueling experience that you have to do by yourself,
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah, I'm doing that as part of Team Ella. It's a group within our club, and one of our runners has a girl, obviously called Ella, and she's in a wheelchair, handicapped. But we do it every year where we run with her. But there'd be about 10 or 11 of us, and we push them around. I'll probably do my own mar well I'm not probably I'm doing my own marathon in Galway on the 4th of October. But then that allows me to be part of Team Ella. And I have to say, it's not all about PBs and racing all the time. The best times I've had in marathons is running them slow with a group like that, or helping somebody get their PB or whatever, whether it be 4 hours, 4.5 hours, whatever it is, because you get to take in the atmosphere a lot more. You know what I mean? It's so much more enjoyable. And yeah, I don't think I'll ever run Dublin for a PB again. It's just our home marathon. It's just such an epic day. All the clubs are, the support they're getting now year on year is getting bigger and bigger. So for me, it's more of a day out for the clubs now, as well, for me anyway, as opposed to chasing PBs. Obviously I'd be supporting people chasing their PBs. That's obviously important to them as well. But personally, I just love the atmosphere around Dublin City Marathon. It's unrivaled. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's gonna be my first marathon, and I'm not running it for time. I'm not gonna put that pressure on myself, because you only get to run your first marathon once, and you
Yeah.
want to be able to appreciate it and soak up the atmosphere. And who knows, maybe I'll sign up to the one next year. I'll see how I get on with this one. But I really do just want to soak it up and enjoy it and not be miserable by the end of it. I'm
Yeah.
sure, like, somewhat I will be physically fatigued, but
Very
to
much so, yeah.
be able, you don't want to be kind of like in, and look, this is just because it's my first marathon. Like, there will be people running for PBs, but to be present and not kind of like have this tunnel vision where you're trying to save every bit of energy, you don't want to wave to people, you don't want to shout to people, like, that's.
For your fourth one is definitely, it'll be a PB anyway. You can look at it that way, but you're setting a baseline as well. But it's about, definitely about, seeing as this something that you enjoy, and can you do I suppose you'll have that fear leading into it. God, am I actually able to do this? And it's just putting that to bed that you can actually do it. So it's taking your time. I mean, I remember doing the story where I remember doing my first marathon. It was in 1999. I was 19. I was still in school, and our PE teacher threw six of us into the marathon. You wouldn't get away with it nowadays, to be honest. The week before, threw six of us into the marathon. So we went out and done it, and we all set off like greyhounds for the first 5K, that way. Two of us finished it, two of them ended up in hospital with hernias and everything,
Jesus.
crazy stuff. It took us, we walked probably the second half of it, all of it, I'd say 6.5 hours, but it's just, you don't have any experience, you know the way. And that's what it is for a lot of people now. It's just getting that experience of what it's all about. relaying the fears are that you can actually do it, like, you know what I mean? Taking it from there, because it's not, the marathon shouldn't be a one and done. And I know a lot of people say, as soon as they cross the line, a lot of them will say, I'll never do that again. Or, you know, they might change their mind later. I'm sure they will change their mind later, because it's, you know, we're grown not just on the marathon itself. The marathon itself is just is the easy part, to be honest. The hard part is all the hard work you're doing in the weeks and months leading up to it. And for me, that's life-changing stuff. That makes you a better person, you know, that way. And to just get your goal done and walk away from it, we touched on it earlier, is a big mistake. I mean, you should be, you know, throwing yourself into the next thing. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, an ultra marathon. It could be another marathon, and then try and improve on the baseline kind of time that you've set in your first one.
Well, like I said, at the start here, I said I'm gonna take on this marathon. I'm gonna raise 10 grand for Irish Cancer Society, and then that'll be, you know, another challenge boxed off. Like that was at the start in January and stuff like that. But now, in the last couple of months, when I've actually seen consistency paying off and like my pace increasing, like it becomes addictive, and I'm like, right, I'm probably gonna be, you know, banjax after this full marathon, and I'll probably, you know, hate the thought of doing another one. But I'm seeing other people putting their paces up and all like that. I'm like, that's gonna be me in 6 months. Like I already have the hunger to get even faster. Like, you know, and I started this with no intention to continue afterwards.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, that's how it works. Like, you know, I mean, I just fell in love with running when I started doing it, and you just want to kind of improve. If you're that kind of person, you want to improve on your times generally, or maybe you go from half to full, like, you know what I mean? It's definitely an addictive sport. But again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier, what you tell yourself is true. So if you know, even one bad result or one bad performance doesn't mean, you know, it's not for you as well. Like, you know, and unfortunately a lot of people think like that. So yeah, I suppose to us, it's up to us as coaches to explain that this is, you know, it's normal to be nervous. It's normal. The marathon is not an easy thing. Like, to say, tell somebody, oh yeah, you'll be grand kind of thing, they will be okay, you know, after it. Like, but they'll be sore, they'll be tired, they'll have those feelings of I'll never do it again, but they pass, you know what I mean? And then what's left is that overwhelming sense of achievement, and you know, I actually put a lot of effort into that. I did that, like, you know what I mean? And I can do that again, and I can do it better if I put, you know, different training, or now I have a year's training behind me. It's only naturally going to be better next year, like, because I have all that in the bank, like, you know. And that's how it works. You're right, people do view these kind of where they are now as snapshots, or compare themselves to somebody else who has 10 years experience, like, you know. And that's that old cliche of, and comparison being the thief of joy. It's very true, like, you know, you are where you are in that moment. And if you just be consistent, you just stay in it, keep showing up, it's naturally just going to get better and better. For like my friend Willie, I talked about him doing a 2 hour 10 marathon. He has years of track work done before he started. He only done start doing marathons in 2023, like, and now he's doing like 2:12, 2:10 marathons. It's crazy, like, but it's not, he didn't just rock up and start doing them. It's all those years of doing all that work, you know, and it's the same for everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to finish up on, dear. And I always say to my own clients, results cultivate motivation when you're seeing your hard work pay off. But that means that you have to put the work in on days you don't feel like it, because that's what does get the results. But once you start seeing results, like your pace increasing, how fitter you're becoming, oh, I ran quicker than I did in my last half marathon. And right, you might not get a PB every race, but you know, you'll learn something with every race, you'll learn something with every challenge along the way. And that's how I always say it, always, it's not about failing, it's how you respond to failure, you know. And sometimes it not everything has to be a failure, you know. Oh, I didn't get a PB, that doesn't mean you failed. What did you, the Clontarf half marathon, I was a little bit slower than my first half marathon, but I crossed the finish line smiling, and I wasn't a shell of myself that I was in the first half marathon, and I took that as progress as well, you know.
Failure is feedback. That's it.
That's brilliant, dear. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. So much insight. What's your next adventure before we go?
So I'm trying to find something for next year. I have a plan. I can't really say it yet, because it's going to be tough to make the logistics of it happen. But if it doesn't happen, I'll find something here in Ireland, like, you know what I mean? There's a race I'd done couple of years ago that I didn't get to finish was like the West Coast of Ireland on the bike. So something like that maybe. But yeah, I'll find something for sure. At the moment, it's just getting this marathon time down. I'm aiming to get it down to 240. I won't get it this year, not by a long stretch, but because I'm so used to doing all the long, slow stuff, I have to kind of train my body to start doing that long stuff at a faster pace. So it's a bit of a 2 year project. And that's kind of part of the other one that I said I can't really mention right now. But basically, by the end of next year, I'm hoping to have a 240 marathon and some outrageous event done as well.
Well, the best of luck with it. I'll be watching, and I'm sure everybody else listening will be watching. You're an absolute inspiration, for motivation. You know, feel the fear, do it anyway. And you're, what would that term be? Like, you're your own biggest ally, aren't you? I suppose you can be your worst enemy or
Absolutely,
your own
absolutely.
biggest ally. So I'd always go for the ally part and believe in yourself and use that skill of using positive inner talk rather than negative inner talk.
Love it, Anya. Great way to finish. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much, dear. I'll talk to you again.